According to my count, by the time we reach the benediction this morning, we will have heard or said or sung the word faith 9 times, not to mention professing our faith, what we believe as Christians, in the words of the Nicene Creed. I actually expected the number to be larger. After all, we are people of faith. We are members of a faith community seeking to live faithfully in this world. And regardless of whether we use the word faith, the language of faith fills our worship, informs our thinking, and shapes our lives. In today's gospel reading, Jesus has been teaching about the life of discipleship, about hospitality, about seeking lost sheep, finding lost coins, welcoming prodigal sons, about the rich man and Lazarus. Then he tells his followers that they must beware of causing anyone to sin. They must rebuke those who do sin, and they must forgive those who repent 7 times a day. It is no wonder that they say to him, "Increase our faith." Luke presents this dialogue for the sake of future leaders of the church. And putting ourselves in their shoes, we might expect Jesus to respond by saying, "Well, I'm so glad you asked. Let me give you some pointers." After all, we think when it comes to the church, we need all the help we can get and then some. We need more resources, more planning, more people. You name it, we need more. So why not more faith? If that is our expectation, then there's a chance that we will misunderstand Jesus' response to the disciples' request. There's a chance that when we hear Jesus say, "If you had faith the size of a mustard seed," we will think, "Well, since we obviously cannot uproot trees, we must be lacking in faith along with everything else." There's a chance that we will hear Jesus' response as a kind of reprimand. But the Greek permits, and I'm inclined to believe, that this is not what Jesus intended at all. That in all likelihood, what Jesus meant by "if you had faith" was not "if you had faith," which you don't, but "if you had faith and you do." In other words, you already have enough faith. Now, put it into practice. Words of encouragement. Trust what you have. Words to live by then and now. So what exactly is this faith that we have? What do we mean when we speak of faith or the Christian faith? There is such a thing, of course, even in what we refer to as a post-Christian world. There is abundant evidence of its reality. Assemblies of people called churches still gather to hear the biblical message read and preached, to sing the Lord's song, and to strengthen their common life through the sacrament of the Eucharist, to confer about their decisions and their actions for the sake of the world, and to learn how better to understand and share their life and calling to follow Jesus. Still, we might ask, what sort of thing are we referring to when we use the phrase Christian faith? If people want to examine the Christian faith, what can they expect to be looking at? And depending on how we answer that question, we might then ask, what people, what sources should be consulted in order to understand the Christian faith? What sort of evidence should be sorted through and weighed to understand this faith? The fact is that the term faith, as we use it, has a wide range of meanings. We frequently take faith to mean a system of teachings and beliefs, something we think, things generally agreed to be true, or opinions widely held. This is the objective aspect of faith. But it calls to mind a subjective aspect as well, something not thought or believed, but the very act of thinking and believing. Not just believing, but believing in. An attitude or a disposition, a willingness to be convinced of the invisible reality of God, and a trustful assent given to what God does for us and what God says to us. Some say that there's a third meaning, one that embraces the first two, a meaning that says faith is not just an attitude or a set of beliefs, but the relationship that we have with God and with one another on the basis of what God has done for us. A relationship that trusts in God's love as the only ultimate ground of meaning, and that expresses itself in commitment to God and because we believe that Jesus was God incarnate, commitment to our fellow creatures. This faith we speak of is not blind trust. It is not passive resignation. It is not an attitude of simply accepting our fate, whatever it might be. It is an active sense of being connected with God, being connected with God in a way that allows us to be honest about hardships and limitations. In this sense, faith is a perception. It is a way of envisioning the world and those who live in it. It is a way of accepting ourselves and accepting them for who and what we are. It is a form of trust that frees us to allow others and ourselves our failures and foolish mistakes, while caring enough to reach out in love when someone stumbles and needs a lift. Faith is trusting that God will be God, and therefore we can be human. Understanding that the power of God lies not in protecting us from suffering, not in protecting us from hardship, but in taking the worst, the very worst, that life can do to us and transforming it into a new and deeper reality. In an essay titled "The Meaning of Life," one of my favorite storytellers, philosophers, theologians, Garrison Keillor, had this to say over 10 years ago. He wrote, "To know and to serve God, of course, is why we're here. A clear truth that, like the nose on your face, is near at hand and easily discernible, but can make you dizzy if you try to focus on it hard. But a little faith will see you through. What else will do except faith in such a cynical, corrupt time? When the country goes temporarily to the dogs, cats must learn to be circumspect, walk on fences, sleep in trees, and have faith that all this woofing is not the last word." What is the last word then? Gentleness is everywhere in daily life, a sign that faith rules through ordinary things, through cooking and small talk, through storytelling, making love, fishing, tending animals and sweet corn and flowers, through sports, music, and books, raising kids. All the places where the gravy soaks in and grace shines through. Even in a time of vanity and greed, one never has to look far to see the campfires of gentle people. Yahooism, when in power, is deaf, and neither satire nor the gospel will stay its brutal hand. But hang on. Another chapter follows. Our brave hopes for changing the world sank in port, and we have become the very people we used to make fun of. The old and hesitant. But never mind. That's not the whole story either. So hang on. Today's gospel confronts us with the question, what do we expect from our faith? Do we expect it to give us miracle working powers so that we can move mountains and uproot large trees? Do we expect it to give us immunity from life's troubles? Do we expect it to give us material rewards? The gospel also confronts us with the answer. Faith, the gospel says, is not a way to get something. It is not believing in order to make something happen. It is not a method or a technique or a tactic. It is not mind control. Genuine faith is faith that lives. It is faith that animates and pulsates through our very being. It is the faith celebrated by the author of today's epistle reading, who wrote to a young minister called Timothy, "I am reminded of your sincere faith, a faith that lived first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and now I am sure lives in you. It is the faith that sustains us in hard times. It is basing our lives on the premise that God's promises will be kept. It is refusing to give up, knowing that another chapter follows." As Garrison Keillor rightly understood, the question of faith is fundamentally the universal question of the meaning of human existence. And the good news for us as people of faith, is that as we face and muddle through life with all of its frustration, pain, and failure, through it all, we can confess that the love that is at the heart of creation is a love that will never let us go. This is the gift of faith and also the mystery. With this faith, we bet on the promise of grace and peace finally brought to fulfillment against all evidence to the contrary by the God revealed in Jesus. And as a result, we can see the whole world and our own lives differently. We can have a different vision of reality, a vision that sees all reality in the hands of God, a vision which, as Jesus said, everything is still open to God's kingdom. May it ever be so.